Three. Got it. Thank you. Okay. Well, welcome everyone to the September 13th, 2021 edition of the Ashland Park and Recreation Commission Ashland Senior Advisory Committee, ASAC, regular meeting. And I just need to get rid of that. First on our agenda would be approval of minutes for the July 12, 2021 minutes. So if people had a chance to read through that, if there's any corrections, we could entertain that. Otherwise, I'd ask for a motion to approve.
I move we approve the minutes.
I second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, and I've just asked for a raise of hands, all in favor of approving the minutes. Aye. Okay, very good. I have no additions or deletions to the agenda. Do you, Eileen, have anything to change up?
No, I'm realizing I left off where I should have put that we were welcoming Corey as our new member, and I failed to put that as an agenda item. We wanted to do that at the beginning so she can be a voting member
there you go.
At this meeting.
Well, let's go ahead and we'll add that in. We have no public input. Is that correct, Eileen?
No one contacted me for public, and we don't seem to have any visitors today.
Rob.
Oh, there he is. Hi, Rob.
So let's we'll add to the addition as a new business the bringing on Corey Frank as a new member of the ASAC Advisory Committee. And Eileen, do you want to do an introduction at all?
Sure, but sure. I'm unprepared. I don't have your whole application in front of me, Corey, so I'm probably going to want you to introduce yourself a little bit. But Corey applied online, and we had a nice interview with Mike and Ann and myself, and we're really delighted to welcome Corey. And a strong interest in senior issues, and Corey has actually been to the senior center since she moved to town and participated in things and been helping senior neighbors. So lots of interest that you bring. Corey, why don't you unmute yourself and tell people a little bit more about yourself?
He was having some trouble with the audio.
Oh, yeah. Dear, we cannot hear you.
Well, I remember some things about Corey. She's an RN. She was involved from the, is it Sonora area? And she's been volunteering in various ways, Ashland at Home. That's what I remember. All right, she's agreeing with me, so I'm not making it up.
Corey, I don't know if anybody already tried to coach you through this, but if you see next to your mute symbol, there's a little upward arrow, and you tried that already. Another possibility, we can't hear you, so I'm so sorry. If you've tried the up arrow and you tried selecting the sound system on your device, that would be the first thing. The next thing to do would be to get a second device and call in for the audio with your phone. And you would need to put in the passcode. All of that was in the email. I think I send all that in the email. Yes, the call-in information is in the email. You just would want to, every now and then when you have two devices, it causes some problems. So you'd want to keep your video device muted if you were using a phone separately.
I looked in the participant list and, okay, she's not muted anymore. Good. Okay.
Well, welcome, Corey. We appreciate your attendance. And
you know, also, if you need to say something, you can also put it in the chat.
Yes, and Rob has even said that, Corey, for voting, you could vote via the chat, and we could watch that. Thanks for that hint, Rob.
Yeah. I don't know that we haven't. Well, actually, yeah, we might with the bylaws. So anyways, welcome, Corey, and we'll work on the technical difficulties for the next meeting as we move forward. So I think we would be prepared to move on to our guest speaker. And there you are, Mr. Hirsch. How are you today?
Fine. I thought I got a message that said the meeting was canceled.
I think that was an old, it used to be at 3 o'clock, and that shows up on your, might show up on your calendar as a canceled meeting, but the 3:30 meetings are good.
Oh, I see. Okay. Just confused.
Okay. Yeah. I can't imagine what that was, Mike, but I do send out the agenda usually on the Wednesday before, and hopefully.
I got the agenda. Good. I got the agenda. I read it all and the old minutes. It's just that it looked like I got the cancel meeting today, half an hour ago, and it was, I guess it was the 3 o'clock meeting was canceled.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. We have sometimes had an issue where even though I sent the invite, if somebody else who's received the invite makes a change on their calendar, occasionally it's gone out to everybody and caused some confusion.
You know, it was just a recurring, it's a recurring notification because I get it every month too.
Do you?
We used to meet at 3 and it's in my calendar and it's still there. And personally, I don't know how to get rid of it. So.
Oh, huh. It's long gone from my calendar, so I have no control over it.
So
if you try deleting the series, that might help.
I'm not that good at a computer.
Yeah.
We have a lot of company here. This is sadly something we all have to work at these days.
So let's move on to number 5 on our agenda, which is the Ashland Emergency Food Bank Services for older adults. And we have Isaac here today. And I'm not sure if Mike wants to introduce him or Eileen, do you want to introduce him?
What Mike do? I want to know what Mike has to say about me.
I wouldn't say it in public, Isaac.
Well, I just want to say thank you to Isaac for joining us today. One of our very important issues for community seniors is access to food, you know, food, housing, and just basic survival are some of the most basic and important issues. And I've been delighted to get to know Isaac as he started at Ashland Emergency Food Bank, and especially looking forward to Isaac talking about the home delivery program as well as other services for seniors, because I know Isaac has really worked up that home delivery program to a different level. So welcome, Isaac, and please feel free to introduce yourself anymore. You know, maybe when you started at the food bank and any background that you want to share before you give us your presentation.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm Isaac Olianski, calling from my home office in the Green Springs right now. Nice to meet you all. I've been with the food bank for approaching a year now. And I think I've finally got 2 feet on the ground at this point. My background is mostly just working with different nonprofits, mostly serving the houseless community in Portland. So making a bit of a pivot, being down here and loving it so far. Let's see. Yeah, I'll just jump into giving a little history about the food bank and where we're at right now with our services. I didn't prepare like a PowerPoint or anything. I figured we'd just talk a little bit and I'm sure you'll have some questions. You know, as you probably all know much better than I do, the food bank has been kind of a cornerstone nonprofit in the community since the 70s, with, you know, more in the last decade or two formalizing as a nonprofit and hiring executive directors and staff. So we've been in our current building in South Ashland. We're just off of the South Ashland exit behind the gas stations on Clover Lane. We are open Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 12:30 a.m. to p.m. For clients to come in and get food. We do have one evening and one weekend hour, open time a month. I might not share those because it's looking more and more likely that we're going to not do that anymore. Those times have not been popular. It is, I think, the third Wednesday and the fourth Saturday. We do a morning and an evening service. Anyways, let's see. So, you know, it used to be that folks came in BC before COVID and were able to push a shopping cart through our facility and fill up, you know, with what food they like. They were assisted by a volunteer in that. It's been since March of the pandemic's beginning that we have not had any of our customers in the building. So this is, you know, perhaps an advantage. You know, you can still go into shopping cart, you can still go into the co-op, but you know, this offers a really safe experience for, you know, perhaps populations that you serve that may not be comfortable going to either of those places. Not that they can necessarily get all their food from us, but it could be, you know, at least just a helpful supplement. So during those open hours, again, 9:30 to 12:30, folks can come once or twice a month to receive a food box. They can either get several giant boxes of food all at once, or they can split that up over two orders over the month. Four times a month, folks are also able to come in the afternoon between noon and 12:30, although we might extend those hours, to access our free table. So outside in the back, like right now, is the best of, I mean, it's just kind of unbelievable how much produce is coming out of people's gardens. And, you know, we're just giving out back there. So, you know, today you could come at 12 o'clock and, you know, leave with a bunch of squash and zucchini and bread and some canned goods and stuff like that. And that's supplemental, that's weekly, in addition to your large box. So that's pretty cool. Let's see, that's, you know, it's a pretty basic program. All of our support comes from the community. We receive a few grants from local grantors, like the Umpqua Indian Foundation, and then just a couple others. But, you know, mostly we're just funded by the community, which is great. Makes us accountable to the community as well, which we like. And yeah, it just kind of has a homespun spirit about it. You know, lots of, you know, I think I have 40 or 50, maybe 40 unique volunteers who come for regular shift. I see one at the bottom of my screen, Mike Hirsch, comes twice a week. Grateful for him. And of course, you know, Steph is on our board and she's part of the city council. So it's nice. We're all, you know, we're very wrapped into the community and have been for many decades and are proud of that. So one point that we want to expand on that Eileen had mentioned is home delivery services. We assume that there's a lot of homebound seniors that we are not reaching and aren't aware of us, or if they are aware of us, you know, maybe experiencing barriers to wanting to call us or not having access to whatever it is. You know, I've been at points in my life where I've needed services from something like a food bank, but I have not felt comfortable asking. So there's like, you know, we're trying to like break down those barriers as much as possible and just make it a, you know, an open, you know, warm space that doesn't really have any judgment to accessing it. You know, you don't get judged when you go to shopping cart. There shouldn't be any feeling of judgment when you come to the food bank. So anyways, we offer home delivery to about 45 people right now. And we are, you know, hoping to reach more. So if there are folks in your network that are really just unable to make it, and we don't really have like strong criteria for what that means. I don't need to see your, you know, ADA parking permit, like none of that. Like it's just sort of like have a conversation with me, make sure that it feels appropriate. And, you know, 9 out of 10 times it is. And, you know, we're happy to do a home delivery, which is all run by our volunteers. And that's fairly simple. It's mostly just arranged between the volunteer who is doing the home delivery and the person who's receiving it. So, but I would usually mediate that. So you can, you know, I could give you my email information. I'm happy to type it in the chat. Might be easily found online. I'll type that in a little bit here when I'm done talking. But you're welcome to just give our office phone a ring and we can help set you up with that. Yeah, I think that's a good layout. If anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer.
I'm curious, Isaac, I'm Deborah. What would you say the percentage is of people that come to the food bank that are seniors?
Yeah. See that email about you know. Okay. I unfortunately we getting the demographic info for that, which I was asked to do, proved trickier than I had expected. So I will have to just offer a guess, which
yeah.
I would offer in like the 20-30% range.
Yeah. Okay. I was just curious. Yeah. And then of course there's probably 10% more that aren't contacting you for whatever reason, like you had mentioned.
Sure. Yeah. We anticipate that the need in the community is bigger than we're aware of. And even possibly bigger than we're able to serve. We're, you know, we have 3 staff now. We're going down to 2, at least for the time being. So, you know, it's always a juggle. Volunteer commitments are only as good as they are present. So we're always trying to dial that up as much as possible.
So Isaac, I'm Anne, and I've got a couple questions. One is there a standard of what's in the box that gets delivered or that's in the box that people pick up, or do people customize it if they've got, you know, gluten-free or,
sure.
you know,
vegetarian.
Yeah.
The answer is yes, fully customizable. And before I answer your question, you just reminded me, I did want to share that we are there's no barriers to our services. Like we tend to prefer people in the Ashland and Talent zip code for delivery. But anyone is welcome. So I just wanted to mention that because you had jogged my memory on that. There's no, you know, prerequisite income requirement, et cetera, just showing up and we'll give you food. As far as the actual food boxes, we have like a, basically like a sheet that we use to fill out orders. Typically when a customer comes in, they're given that sheet, they circle what they want, they give it to us and we get it together for them. You know, the relationships between our volunteers and the people they deliver to tend to get pretty close. They tend to know, like, they don't do the 2% yogurt, they'll do the whole milk, or, you know, they tend to get pretty nitty gritty. You know, it's Oregon, we all have our thing. it's very customizable, vegetarian, gluten-free, whatever.
Can I speak in a couple words? If you haven't been to our food bank, you'd be amazed at the variety of everything we have. And for home shoppers, the ones, at least on the 2 days when I'm there, who deal on the phone with the people who are going to have the stuff delivered to their home, we get down to very good detail. Like in milk, we have soy milk, almond milk, rice milk, and all forms from skim to 1% to 2% to whole of the whole milk. They get their choices. Gluten-free, yes. Sugar-free, salt-free. And after a while, you get to know who you're shopping for, and they get total availability of everything we have. And it's surprising to me how large an inventory we have of different kinds of foods, even the vegetables, even the canned vegetables, the canned string beans can be sugar-free, salt-free, regular, all that, those kinds of details. So we're especially good for seniors who have restrictive diets.
So where does the food come from? How does somebody donate? Are you still kind of preferring cash or, you know, money as compared with donated goods?
We're absolutely open to donated goods right now. Donating is very simple. 9:30 to 12:30 are open hours. Come on by and pull up in our back and we'll grab it for you. Of course, the Ashland Food Project does their big collection 6 times a year, and they're great to connect with if, you know, that's something you want to participate in. That's the simplest way to do it. Just drop on by. Preferably, you know, we'll take fresh fruits and vegetables. We'll take, you know, packaged frozen items or packaged perishable items, you know, pretty flexible on that.
Do you also have and I don't know if maybe you do this with the cash you have. Do you buy your, like, your chicken or fish or think, you know, the that kind of perishable?
Sure, yeah. We have a relationship with Albertsons and Safeway, and we get an unbelievable quantity of frozen meat. So we give that out with our regular orders.
Do you purchase that from them, or do they donate it?
They donate it. Yeah.
So what kind of things do you purchase with the money that people donate?
Mm-hmm. Mostly are like staple items, like oils and pasta, and I mean, it tends to be supplementary. Like, we'll have the food project come in, and you know, we have another month to go, and our shelves are getting a little skimpy, so you know, we'll kick back in and pick up the bulk items that we give away when we run out of the donated items.
Right.
Yeah.
We also have take-home dinners, Mexican rice and beans and tuna casserole, and some of the volunteers make up bags with all the ingredients for the dinners with the recipes in them. And we do buy things like rice in 50-pound bags and other staples that go into the made-up dinners. But the made-up dinners are complete, you know, for a family of all those kinds of ingredients. We even have dog food and cat food, and you name it, we got it.
So do you also serve the, you know, SOU students?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I know they haven't
been coming in the last year as much, unfortunately. But we connected with their food pantry in the past and support them, and they, you know, we get a good chunk of the student population coming by. Yeah. Yeah.
Eileen. Well, Deborah, kind of in response to your question about the percent of seniors, a very good question. I only anecdotally can say that we refer to the food bank quite frequently, that we often hear from seniors that have either food insecurity or just in general economic challenges. And so if they're calling us to tell us about an economic related crisis, once we kind of address that, we start to talk to them about some of the services in the community that could help them on a regular basis, that might help them extend whatever income they have coming in to help with those emergencies if they didn't spend it every week on the groceries, for instance. And so we refer a lot to a combination of the Food and Friends program that can help people get typically 5 meals a week with a suggested donation, but that is optional if someone has limited means, combined with the food bank, that can really be helpful for someone who's really challenged economically and also sometimes just challenged physically with the effort of preparing meals or going to the store and needing something really simple. So if they could get those 5 or sometimes 7 complete meals from Food and Friends, and then a box from the food bank that maybe lets them fill out the rest, some cereal and some milk and some peanut butter and some bread, you know, that helps them make something super simple within their capabilities at that time to make sure that they're not going hungry in the week. So we are super grateful for our partnership. And I don't know that everybody in ASAC knows that Mike Hirsch has traditionally brought supplemental food over to the senior center. And that was very popular. He would bring the bread, and sometimes when there was a lot of peanut butter on the shelves or some tuna. We tried pasta for a while, but discovered that our constituents weren't cooking even as much as a pot of pasta, you know. Peanut butter and bread was more the speed that somebody might be at when they're 90 years old and pretty frail. And wonderfully, Mike and Zara, who runs the program, and Steph had gotten involved with us. It took us a while into COVID, but we figured out how to continue doing that. And Mike brings over just what Zara can give out specifically to the people who are coming to pick up their meals right now. So we partner on many levels, and we're very grateful for the role that the food bank plays.
One of the things I just wanted to say, I used to volunteer some time ago, for the food bank. I haven't done it for a couple of years now, but one of the things that I think people really appreciated was the ability to select what they wanted. And I'm glad to hear that they're still able to do that. I was a little concerned with COVID that it might be more of a, well, this is the box that you get, but it sounds like that's not the case at all. And I think that's so different than many food banks where it is the case, where, you know, there's a set stuff that you, that you get, and it's good and it's important, but still it's not that preference. And it doesn't give the idea that the person is actually shopping, which is more the normal kind of thing. It's more of, you know, I'm receiving this charity kind of thing. And I think it isn't as acceptable, but where this is where people can really choose what they want, where there's an interaction between the volunteer and the person. I get that there's probably less of that, but, you know, when it was more normal, kind of going around the area with them, you really got to know people and not only their food preferences, but you heard their stories. And that also made it rewarding from a volunteer standpoint, because you thought you were doing, I thought I was doing a little bit more than just, you know, helping them food that fill their food basket. So when we can get back to that, I think that's an important thing.
Amen. But there's also something else that people don't realize. If you're needy, you need more than food. And the food bank also provides personal items, toilet paper, senior diapers, if you will, toothbrushes, toothpaste, shaving cream, shavers, soap, detergent, dishwasher soap, laundry soap, soap to wash with. All those kinds of items are provided as well.
So how does it work? For example, I'm thinking in particular of one woman I just met recently through the work I do with the Death with Dignity Act. So she's pretty much homebound. She's disabled, and she's quite ill. She's, you know, that's why she's pursuing Death with Dignity. She's very, you know, she's on Medicaid. She's dual Medicaid. So how does somebody, for example, fill out, can you do this all remotely? Can you fill out what you want on some form, and then someone else or have you deliver it? So is it like, you know, you can check, like a shopping list, you can check it, sure, and then somebody delivers it to the food bank and collects it and delivers it to the person without them even going there at all?
Yeah, we could do that kind of like ordering over the phone, could mail them a form, we could, you know, email it to them for them to fill out whatever is most comfortable for them, and, you know, drop it off at the front door without any contact if that's what they were looking for.
Okay. All right. So in other words, someone could just kind of fill out like what they like. They'd like some chicken, they'd like some rice, some bread, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. They could just fill it out free form and email it to you then with instructions on, you know, delivering it or something like that.
That's sure. Awesome. Yeah. If we haven't gotten the impression across, it's a pretty small like homespun operation, and like just contact us and we'll probably figure something out. There's like not like a, you know, protocol in place for like that particular situation, but we'll absolutely make it happen.
Okay. Yeah. Okay,
cool. Corey asked a question in the chat. Can you pick up for your neighbor?
Sure. Yeah. Especially if you're willing
several
to do nothing.
Several people on Wednesday especially, but also on Friday, do that. They come in and shop for their next door neighbor who's not so well.
Eileen, go ahead.
Rob had a question as well. There he is. If that's all right, that we are a little more flexible than some committees, if we can let our guest ask a question.
Sure.
Thank you. Somebody else already asked the question, and so it's already been answered.
Okay, great.
But I had a quick question. What is the What percentage of the home deliveries that the food bank does do you think goes to seniors?
That's a good question. I have less of a sense of who those people are. Okay. But honestly, probably half or more.
Yeah, you would think so. You know, people that can't get out or
whatever
reason. And then this is just for my own information. What percentage of food that you generate comes from the Ashland Food Project? Do you know?
I'd say, I used to have the number for this. We get like 30,000 pounds every 2 months. So it's a pretty staggering amount. It's got to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 60-70%.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
That's a great project.
Really
stock the shelves. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions from committee members of Isaac?
Well, just one. So I'm imagining that the Oregon Trail card. The Oregon Trail card, I don't think lets you purchase toiletries and things like that. Does anybody know? Because it would seem like Mike Hirsch's comment that you can get some of those things would supplement people if they can't get them on the with food stamps. No.
I don't know the answer to that, and somehow I had the impression that people were allowed to buy some of those, that it was more things like, you know, alcohol and such that was excluded, but the basics were included. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's another piece of that tripod for food insecurity, is making sure people are on SNAP if they qualify for that. The nice thing about the food bank and the Food and Friends is it's not as hard to qualify. Food and Friends is just 60 and above is all it takes. And the food bank, as Isaac said, does not grill people on their income and assets and things like that. So.
All right. Well, I want to thank Isaac for coming to speak to us today. I don't know if you have any closing comments or anything you'd like to add to the conversation.
Just that if anyone in your community is interested in volunteering or needs a box, just give us a ring or give me an email.
Very good.
Cool.
We really appreciate your input today, and we'll reach out to you.
Cool.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot. Okay.
Very good.
That was informational. That was very good. Next on our agenda will be proposed edits to the ASAC bylaws. And I'm going to turn this over to Superintendent Glatt. And hopefully people were able to read through the packet to see some of the changes that are being proposed. So I'll turn it over to you, Eileen. Go ahead.
Great. Maybe I should share my screen. Would that be easier?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Let me get the document open. And let's see. Okay. Can everybody see the bylaws there?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. So I'll just start by saying thank you to Mike and Rob, who is not a current member, but was a member in our, did his first term, a term with us. They helped us create this, and these were approved by this committee and as a recommendation to the commission, and the commission approved these bylaws. But over time, we encountered a couple things. Then we've kind of changed our practice, but not really gone back and edited these bylaws. And this is something I've meant to bring you for a while when we didn't have other fires to put out. So the first one is that we originally started with the idea of a three-year term and you just start on X date and you were going to end 3 years later. But on the advice of some folks based on other committees, we decided that it would be better to have a consistent end date and to make sure that we staggered those three-year terms to the best of our ability so that we didn't have everybody exit at once or randomly. And so this wording says it's a three-year term that's always going to end on June 30th of their final year. And it had always said members could have up to two terms, but instead of saying with, here I'm going to have to minimize, members serving no more than two consecutive terms, we just pulled that into a separate sentence so that we could say, change the date. And then it becomes a little bit complicated if a position is vacated midterm or remains unfilled at the start of a term. And what Mike and I are proposing is that whoever is appointed at that time would be a member for the remainder of the unexpired term for that position with the option to serve two full additional terms. So for instance, Corey is starting now in September, not July of the next year. So she would be finishing out essentially this term through the end of June, and then she would start her three-year term and she can renew for another one after that. Let me pause there and make sure that is making sense to all of you. And see if anybody has
a question. So I have a question. So is that true whether like somebody resigned and somebody was filling that slot that way, but then also if we had a vacant position and the person came in later than July? So
right.
Both of those?
Exactly. Okay. And that we would try to have them do a partial term to then get a lot, you know, to finish out a partial term and then start a three-year term. And this is what Mike has told me is more commonly used with, he's on so many boards and committees. This is a standard that when you have a fixed number of positions, you have people finish out terms as they rotate in and out. But you're absolutely right that sometimes the vacancy causes that. So that's why I said, or remains unfilled at the start, you know.
That's how I read it, but I just was, because I agree with it, but I just wanted clarification.
I hope that I've worded this in as clear a way as possible. I'm seeing some nodding, thank you, if it looks okay to you. It gets kind of technical and it can be hard to word, but if it makes the best common sense that it can, I'll be satisfied. You okay with this wording? Okay. All right, let me go on then. We've also gotten concerned about people who might join us but not actually attend and then occupy a space that could have been filled with somebody who's more available to participate. And so we're suggesting this, you know, gentle comment about, you know, we already had that they're expected to attend meetings, but that if a member misses more than two consecutive meetings or more than three meetings in 12 months, that they may be released from their term so that someone with more ability could participate. And obviously there will be times that people resign midterm for various life reasons. Are you all comfortable with this wording?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, I think this actually occurred to us not because of any behavior in this committee, but because of another committee where someone kept missing meetings, but kept saying, but I really want to be part of this. And the energy was really draining out of that committee. You know, they really wanted the opportunity to bring in somebody who was actually able to show up and participate. So
sometimes the other thing that that I've seen is that if you have somebody that comes infrequently and you've been working on something together and you have a good understanding of it and they bring up information or that doesn't really relate to it because they don't understand it, it just kind of slows things down too.
Yeah.
I think that
good point.
Actually.
So let's see. Moving on to this one. When we had originally said, oh, we're just going to elect them on July 1, but we didn't really allow for the fact that we needed to know who the chair is so we can plan the agenda and things like that in terms of officers. So it just clarified that we're going to hold the election at the last meeting prior to July 1 of each year. And also clarified that there's no term limit. Even though we have obviously a term limit on membership, since we have 3-year terms, someone could be on for 6 years or even more, as we just explained, and we have a 1-year term for officers. We're realizing we don't need, if we've got someone who's willing to keep being a chair and is good at it, we don't need to push them off and hound all the rest of the members to be a chair when that's not what they're wanting to do at that time. So we just, Mike and I thought it would be better to make this more flexible. Is that one looking okay to everyone?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I can only see 4 of you at once, so I keep going back and forth.
Yes.
Okay, good. Good. And then subcommittees, this had to do with something I mentioned to ASAC probably over a year ago, that Michael Black was advised by the city attorney that we had to be a little careful of some subcommittee language versus work group language. That so we had used those terms interchangeably originally. But really, this is written to a formal subcommittee that is formally appointed by the chair, you know, mostly because people volunteer, and it's a formal committee, and that committee has to report their findings back to ASAC in a public meeting, and that subcommittee, every meeting has to comply with Oregon public meeting laws. So that posting of agendas and sending the agendas in advance and posting the minutes and posting the recording, it's a lot. And we realized that really the work that our members have done are more in the definition of a work group, where it's informal, that it's several members choosing to get together to work on a particular issue. They are reporting back at the discretion of the work group rather than an assignment from the chair or ASAC itself saying you will report back to us on X. It's, hey, we're working on this issue off on the side, or two of us are advising the staff on education, but it's not that level of formality. So we just had to clean up our language here to make sure that we remain in compliance with public meeting laws. And there was really no need to have a paragraph about work groups, but to just be very formal. If you're calling it a subcommittee, you have to make sure it follows the rules. So I see nodding. Looks like that's okay with people.
That's fine.
Okay, good. And that, other than getting a new approval date, when Mike Gardner, who is also the chair of the commission, will sign this. So if, I guess at this point, if all that looks good, I would love to have, let me go over this with the dates, because that's right. And then we'll see if we can get a motion to approve this. And the way we approve it, to remind you, is as a recommendation to the commission, because the commission approves our bylaws. We approve it as a recommendation. So when we had done these, we were asked to have an addendum that actually had the original members, because again, it helps you track your original positions and who's filled. And so what I did was a new one based on, this was July 1. I realized I didn't get Corey on here. I apologize, Corey. I'll send you careful dates for you. But this is allowing us to stagger, you know, our terms based on when they were appointed and ending a term. And I know when Kathy, when you joined, you weren't sure that, how long you were going to continue to live in our community. And so I didn't want to say, we'll finish out a year or term and then do three more. I wanted to give you a shorter one. So we've grouped you. As you can see, we've got them nicely staggered. Our Corey will actually finish in June 22 and then start her three-year term. And then these two are 2023 and these are 2024. Kathy, is that okay with you?
Yes, that's great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Didn't want to overcommit you with your initial commitment. So that's what it looked like as of July 1, 2021. And I apologize that I missed a couple pieces when we heard from Corey and we're ready to bring her in. With your permission, I guess I should add that and update this before we take it to the commission. Does that sound right, Mike, or would I have to stick with it as it is?
Well, I think we can just vote to accept the amendments if we choose to, and just with the knowledge that you're going to fill in number 8 with Corey's name.
Yes.
And that's what will formally go to the commission.
Okay, that sounds great. So Corey, your end date would be June 2025.
Well, actually June 2022. And then she would be eligible.
And then she would renew for the 3 years. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
So any specific questions on any of the things that Eileen has covered? Seeing no hands, I would take a motion. There's a motion in the packet, possibly to adopt these recommendations.
I so move.
Okay, it's been so moved to accept the ASAC bylaws as edited and recommendations adoption to the Park and Recreation Commission. Do I have a second?
I second.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Any further discussion from anyone? Then maybe Natalie, could we just take a roll call vote?
Yes.
All right. Valegia.
Approve.
Hirsch.
Approve.
Gardner.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
McNeil.
Yes.
Seffinger.
Yes.
Tice.
Yes.
Frank. If you just want to put your hand up, this.
Okay.
Wait, was this do you approve or do you have a?
Doesn't approve.
Okay.
Okay.
I definitely would like to hear any concerns from Corey. And Corey, you weren't able to get in on a phone so that we could hear from you? No. Would you consider typing something in the chat? I know I'm out of order in terms of discussion, Mike, but I'm wondering if we could at least hear that.
If you want to put something in the chat, for sure. The motion does carry.
Yes.
So we're beyond that. Or if you want to have a private conversation with Corey and we could do that.
Why don't we do that, Corey? I'd like to hear what your concerns were about the motion and about the bylaws. Okay. Okay, she's nodding.
Okay. We can either move on with standing reports and updates, or we can take a short break and allow Eileen to convert.
Oh, we can do that offline.
Okay. Then we'll move on to standing reports, and I'd be first up on the list. And actually, the only thing really pertaining to this group that I wanted to report, and it might have already been in Eileen's report, but the Park and Recreation Commission did approve the designating parking spots on Hunter Court when the Walker Elementary School rebuild takes place and the street gets widened. As you know from previous discussion, the Hunter Court is a private street managed and controlled by APRC. And we're going to designate the parking places that are on the, I guess that would be the east side or the senior center side of the street from that are not already handicapped and or loading zones. There's approximately, I think, eight spots that will be designated for the senior center parking during normal business hours, which currently are 8:30 to 3:30. So that was approved by the Parks Commission. It's probably a year or two off because that's probably the construction line for Walker Elementary School. But when things get disrupted and parking could potentially be tight, when we finally get the project completed, there'll be designated parking for the senior center, which I think is a real bonus. Hopefully it'll be used appropriately. We didn't in our motion with the parks actually say we were going to come back and visit it, but I did mention that, you know, for some reason the senior center doesn't use the parking, then we would probably address it at some point in time, but it's scheduled to be signed for a senior center parking, so which I think will be helpful to people, and especially after the construction dust settles and whatnot, it'll be nice to have a place nearby to park. And I was trying to think of nothing that particularly pertains to this group, other than for anybody that plays pickleball, the pickleball courts have been resurfaced. They look great. And I think it's really going to be a tribute to the efforts of a lot of people to kind of change the focus of the Lithia Park courts. And they look great. There's dozens of people playing there every day, especially with the weather getting the smoke finally filing out of the valley and whatnot. And also I took a brief tour this morning of the Japanese garden with Director Black, and things are moving along slower than we'd like, but we're on schedule. It's, you know, the garden itself is not scheduled to be completed until November of 2022. So we're at least a year away, but things are moving along, and it should be quite an addition to the Lithia Park experience once that's completed. So,
Mike,
Andy,
question. I mean, with all the discussion in the city about the parks budget,
yeah,
are you concerned about that? I mean, I'm concerned about it, the senior center, and how that might affect things. How are you feeling about that?
I am also gravely concerned. I feel that that APRC as a whole has a huge target on its back right now for whatever reason, and we've been trying to voice our collective opinion about how important the various facilities and programs that APRC offers to the community. I'll have to say, excuse me, Steph, but I'll say that I feel that it's fallen on, if not deaf ears, it's fallen a lot on inexperienced ears with the turnover in the city staff. You know, a change in council always brings along a little bit of baggage with it. You know, people that don't quite have the history or think they're going to change things up fairly seriously. And I guess that's kind of where we're at right now is we've got a city manager and a finance director, part-time finance director, that have been around for about 4 or 5 weeks. And they're going to be making recommendations that are pretty, I won't say questionable, but they're potentially disruptive to the APRC operation, which involves senior services, which involves the Nature Center, which involves Lithia Park and everything we do, all the recreation, all the parks that we maintain, all the facilities that we provide to citizens. So I'm gravely concerned. There's the September 21st is when the city council is going to take up a recommendation from the interim city manager. So just a couple weeks away. APRC, the Board of Commissioners, was briefly at the table for an August meeting, but we didn't get to a lot of the meaty topics that really need to be discussed. And the city council appears to be wanting to go it on their own with limited input from APRC. So we're going to have to see how it shakes out. And the September 21st is going to be a pretty good indication of how things are going to go, where funding will be, and what we have in front of us, and then hopefully we'll be able to. We're not sitting back just taking it. I'll say that first, but you know, we're not really sure what direction to try to pursue at this point, other than to stimulate citizen input into what they feel is important in regards to APRC and the city. But go ahead, Ann.
Well, I just don't know how tuned in citizens are to these issues or what the implications would be for them personally. People are pretty distracted, I think, with COVID and everything. And the problem is, once the things are set and people start going, wait a minute, it's really almost too late to reverse. And I mean, the postcard was good, but I don't know how effective. Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. People tend to come to these meetings and testify. The people who are negative are organized, and the people who are assuming that things will be just the way they have been with regard to services could be in for a big surprise after the fact. So I'm wondering how much advocacy we could be doing, not just for the senior program, although that's obviously very important to us, but seniors, because we're such a big part of the community, are parks users in general, you know, well beyond the senior services area. And of course, it's the most intergenerational thing that goes on in the city. It serves people from all ages. So it's very democratic. It, you know, transcends income and age and all of those things. And I'm just not sure people are aware enough of the threat in order to get through the barriers that are there to informing the council.
Well, public input is an important feature of open democracy. So each and every one of us has an opportunity to tell the city council what we think is important or how we think it affects us. And Steph and I deal with a lot of public input and deal with controversial items. And I truly believe this will be a controversial item. And the more public input we have from the folks that actually use the services or depend on the services or expect the services, I think it's going to be important to the discussion moving forward. Once the council makes their decisions, you know, that's the way it's going to be. And APRC we have tried to look at it from a global vision, but you know, we need parks and recreation into the future. We need the senior services program. We need a lot of the things that are provided through Parks and Rec into the future. And right now, the discussion is about funding. It's not about how we're going to get those services, keep them moving into the future. It's all about dollars and cents, which, you know, I won't say that it's short-sighted, but it's, you know, we're going to have to make some tough decisions, and then we're going to have to figure out how we're going to move forward if the decision comes down not in our favor. And that's pretty much what we're battling and what we're trying to strategize on right now.
But Mike, you know, it's the thing is that I don't think people have the ability to understand abstracts when it comes to numbers. If there were awareness that if this happens, we're going to have to close the nature center, or we will, we will not be having the ice rink, or, you know, the thing is people have to understand what they will lose as a result of what you anticipate some of these budget issues or budget consequences to be. Because like I say, it's dollars are abstract. They're big numbers for people. And so, you know, they look at a big number and go, yeah, well, you could probably cut that 15% or whatever they think, but they have to know what they're going to lose. And then they will advocate from that point of understanding.
And I totally agree with that. And once again, no respect to Councillor Seppinger, but we don't know what level of funding the council is going to approve for the second year of the biennium. So once we know that, which could come as soon as the September 21st, then we will have to address all those. I mean, right now it's an unknown, you know. So go ahead, Eileen.
I just need to pass along something that Michael would probably say if he was here, that we as staff have regulations at a state level that we can't do a lot of publicity saying, if we're cut this much, this will be cut. That Michael could explain it better, but that's a kind of persuasion that we as staff are not allowed to use. And Mike, maybe you can use the right words here for it, but we do have our hands tied. We can tell people there's an issue up, it may have an impact on you, and here's the way you can give public comment about what's important to you. We can't say you should go talk to the city council and argue that the Parks and Rec will be fully funded or you'll lose all the things you care about. You know, we can't say it that way.
You know, Eileen can't say that, but I can say that. I'm an elected official and a citizen, and that's basically what I'm saying. And so the advocates for APRC, it starts with the board of directors, which is five elected officials that, you know, and so, yes, I'm telling you that they may be large numbers, they may be abstract, but certain things are, there's consequences to all the decisions we make. And I mean, I don't want to sit in the city council position right now, to be perfectly honest with you. I know what they're going through, but, you know, I also know what the consequences of some of the decisions that are made will be to folks like us, the citizens of Ashland.
Yeah.
you know, not that the counselors aren't also citizens, but you know, they have a tall order on their, you know, on their plate. They have a lot that they're going to have to decide. But we don't know what their decision is yet. So that makes it kind of tough to start going, well, if you do this, you're going to lose this, or this is what it's going to look like. Or, I mean, we're waiting for that. We're not waiting for it. We're strategically planning for the worst case scenario or the best case scenario, but we don't know what that scenario is yet.
I think what we can individually do if we wish is write or call or say what our desire is. I mean, I'm not staff. I can do that. And that's what I plan to do.
Yeah.
There's also a bigger concept in terms of what people could be communicating to the council, to the city council, in terms of if there's an economic reason for parks and livability, it's shown that a lot of millennials and zoomers that work at home value those things. So it's important to know that the quality of life of the city is also going to be important in attracting commerce and new people to the city. So that's it's important to wrap the parks not only to look as broadly as you can. The Nature Center, for example, you look at kids and stewardship, and they're not going to learn to be good stewards of the environment unless they're ever in it. I don't know that I wouldn't think that trying to look at the lofty reasons for this and then also trying to hone down the specifics becomes more important. I mean, we're a city that wants to be compact. We don't want urban sprawl. And if you're that type of a city, you don't have backyards, you don't get places to walk your dogs. Again, livability in parks becomes more important. So trying to think about those things when you talk about why things are important, it's not just one small part of things, it's a larger stake in really in our world.
I think that was a segue into the city council update.
Well, I said that before to the city council, probably. People are going to throw arrows at me, I know.
Anything else you want to update us on, Steph?
Well, let's see. We've been having more problems with staff shortages as everybody's been having. It's interesting to note that in, there have been markets that haven't been able to have enough employees. When I went to get a COVID shot today, there wasn't a person that could give it. When we have fire that's sent a letter from their representative to the city manager and to the governor about their concern about mandated vaccines. Fire and police in general have not been friendly towards that concept, with some people saying they'll leave. So dealing with staff shortages is certainly an issue.
One way to solve the budget.
I think we ought to move on because it's getting close to 5 o'clock.
It's 4:43.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else, Steph?
No, that's anything you want to ask, fine, but that's about it.
Okay.
Budget.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, we'll move on to the education report from Natalie.
Thank you. So unfortunately, we had to postpone our computer labs for older adults that we scheduled in September and October with Jackson County Library Services because neither the library nor us are doing in-person programs. But we have gotten such a strong response with so many people signing up for that and just being grateful that there was an opportunity to learn how to use their device, that we are keeping an interest list so that we will reschedule those when we can and maybe even try to do more of an ongoing something, some sort of digital literacy program for older adults, probably in conjunction with the library because they are a wonderful resource for that. So that's part of the longer term project. In terms of special events, most of the ones that we have on the books for the remainder of the year are outdoor social events for the holidays. We have our wonderful cookout with the police department this Friday. And then we're hoping to do something for Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas. And I'm also working on maybe trying to put together a guided park walk in Lithia Park for older adults. It looks like Mike Gardner might be the volunteer leading that. I just saw the email, which would be the small world, but in a way to use both volunteers that aren't getting to do these park walks and provide a fun outdoor activity for our audience. But we are planning on bringing back more educational presentations. It's just an issue with getting the attendance. It's so hard to engage people with these virtual educational presentations that we want to be a bit more thoughtful and have enough lead time so that we're not always having to cancel on folks. I start to feel like the boy who cried wolf with, we're doing this. No, we're not. We're doing it again. No, we're not. So I think we just have to, we don't want to exhaust our audience with that. And another strategy we will try is maybe some potential instructors who are wanting to promote classes that they want to teach with us may potentially give presentations. And Anne is always giving us great ideas like, like having facilitated webinar watching and things like that. So lots of ideas. Nothing really concrete other than some social events at this time.
I'd like to ask, why can't we have outdoor in-person classes or whatever you want to call it, where everybody has to be vaccinated to attend and they stand 6 feet apart and
sit.
Sits or stands, okay, sits is fine. And the leader has a microphone and you do the class. I know that Char is teaching, for those who don't know, as part of the senior center, Tai Chi for seniors, outdoors. Everyone in the class has been vaccinated, fully vaccinated. You don't need to wear masks because we're in a big place outdoors and everybody's well separated from everybody else, and it goes wonderful. It was a great class this morning. Why can't we do that kind of thing?
We have done that with our yoga classes. We had to stop having them outdoors because the smoke rolled in. So in the summertime, we have explored doing that with our discussion group. We discussed doing that with our game groups. There are a few obstacles. One is that the weather makes it very challenging where, we would schedule something, but for a paid program, we really kind of had to have a backup. So we had a Zoom backup for that yoga class. The other one is the timing of the day. It's tricky for us to mess with our programming schedule. We want to not deviate it from it a whole lot, because then people have the expectation that, oh, this class is now at this time, but eventually we want to revert to the schedule that we had developed where we could maximize our offerings to the community. So we have to be sensitive for that. That meant that some programs that might have worked outdoors, like a social group, would have been outside in the summertime when it was too hot. And we just don't have the staff support in order to facilitate all of those, because granted, people don't have to wear masks at this time outside if they're socially distanced. The reality is, when we did facilitate some outdoor social groups, we were constantly monitoring them and having to make sure that they were adhering to those guidelines to be safe. And we have limitations on, we are not able to verify vaccine status. That is not that is not, unfortunately, one of the tools in our toolkit.
So far, the city has chosen not to go in that direction, or Parks and Rec.
So now, that's had one question. When you mentioned that you're just not getting the, I think you mentioned you're not getting the audience, you're not getting the numbers and the attendees for some of the Zoom webinars. Is that because of the computer kind of illiteracy thing, or is that mainly why, or is it just lack of, are people just, a lot of people I know are Zoomed out. They just don't want to do one more Zoom class.
Is that, some people are like me. I hate Zoom meetings. I once a month, I'm willing to go on Zoom. That's it.
Yeah. Because everything's on Zoom now.
Yeah, it's a combination of those, Deborah. Definitely part of it is that people don't feel comfortable on that platform. We try to provide as much support as possible. We have a web page with tutorial videos. I often will do online registration for people over the phone. I do that every month. And then we have a tutor that will coach people by phone on how to feel comfortable using Zoom. So that is definitely a factor. I do not think it is as big of a factor as people not wanting to engage remotely and just waiting until they can be back in person again. That is what I hear over and over again. Exactly. Oh, I'm fine. I'll just wait until we can come back in person.
I'm one of those.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's a challenge. It's not the same, but it's what we got right now. So.
Any other questions of Natalie?
Corey put something in the chat.
Oh, thanks for alerting me. Oh, so Corey's question had to do with Mike Gardner, when you were talking about the recommendations that would be made at that meeting on the 21st, I believe, about the budget. Is that right, Corey? And whether those recommendations would be, will they be made aware once the recommendations are made? Is there a forum for them to learn that information?
Well, my suggestion would be is you can go on the city website and you can look for the agenda for the September 21st meeting. And there will be a memo from staff outlining the interim city manager's recommendation to the council. Now that doesn't necessarily mean that's what the council is going to agree on, but that'll give you the what is going to be discussed at that meeting.
Could we have you send us that information? Not sure everybody knows how to find all that stuff. That way, if we can tailor our advocacy, maybe.
Sure. You know, actually, I have the city manager's proposed recommendation, and I can have Natalie or Eileen send that out to this group.
And I can try to send the link for the city council meeting. I don't always see when the agenda comes out, but I'll make a point of looking for that.
We actually have the agenda item too that we could send you. Just so you can either go to the website or we can send that to you.
Thank you. We can do that.
Anything else for Natalie? Great. Thanks, Natalie. I'll turn it over to Eileen for you have three minutes now.
Yeah, and we probably want to have a
a little bit at the end there. Well, we're very excited, Natalie and I, that our Ashland Senior Phone Buddy program, we completed 2 trainings. We have about 10 volunteers right now. I hope that's our current number, Natalie. People are getting matched and we're continuing to recruit. Natalie and I are trying to schedule another training, I think for early December, so that we can actually recruit more participants, because so far we're mostly matching the people who have translated over from our earlier version of the program. So that's an exciting transition. It took many, many steps, and big kudos to Natalie and our OHSU volunteers, that our interns that helped us get to this stage. I also, hopefully you saw in my report, a nice before and after picture. We have changed the flooring, the hard flooring at the senior center that used to be quite a patchwork and had started to give us problems at the connections, that the flooring people couldn't seal down anymore and we had tripping hazards. So several years ago, this started me down this path of trying to figure out the flooring, and it was quite a project. We were able to pay for it with funds from the Ashland Parks Foundation Senior Center account that has donations that have come in over many years, and actually quite a bit of earnings from that account for many years. And that really helped us fund what was a pretty expensive project, but we now have a beautiful and very durable vinyl planking floor. So someday we'll get to meet there again and you'll get to see how different the senior center looks. But I have to say, this period while we're closed was a good time to have the flooring redone. So I'm really glad that I managed to hit that window. We almost didn't make it, and then we had to shut down again, and there it was. And I guess the last thing I will mention that wasn't in my report is Director Black and I together will be presenting as part of an OLLI class called Work of the City that John Stromberg is organizing. It's a repeat of some past classes. I think Sandy organized one of these in the past. And it's a great class to learn more about kind of exactly some of the things we were talking about. How does one advocate? How do these decisions get made? And this is the first time that I'll be part of that, so that when we talk about Parks and Rec, we can feature the Senior Services Division a little bit more this time, which is very appropriate for the audience of OLLI members. They can learn more about this part of how the city works. That's it for me, unless there's any 2-second questions.
Any questions for Eileen from committee members? Great. Well, thanks a lot, Eileen. Appreciate everything you do. Next, we have items from ASAC members and work groups. Sandy, do you have an update for us?
Well, I'll keep it short. Livable Ashland, we do continue to meet. We're in the process of determining, I would say, specific initiatives that we might have. We have a whole gamut of things that we might do, but like a lot of groups, we don't have enough people to do everything. So we're kind of narrowing that down and paying attention to that. We also are in the process of putting together the next step that goes to AARP as part of the Livable Ashland AARP proposal. So I'll let it go at that.
Great, thank you. Questions? Go ahead, Ann.
It's not really a question, but I think there's probably a lot more about Livable Ashland that we should be reporting to the general ASAC on, and we sort of haven't had the time because it always ends up being at the last item and we're rushed and so forth. So I would just suggest that we try to have a little more coverage of that at our next meeting.
Yeah, I think we could probably make it an agenda item further up in the meeting and devote more time to it.
We might, I don't know who we have coming next. I don't know how far in advance you have guests coming, Eileen.
We have some people lined up, but I haven't locked any down. And that's actually a little bit of a question I even had as we were talking about the next meeting. Is this the right time, Mike, then, yeah, to do that?
Yeah.
We had at one point scheduled Linda Reed, and due to some confusion, she didn't join us. And part of what we wanted her to renew was our understanding about affordable housing. We remember we've had a couple other housing related presentations, but this is a really important piece that the planning department folks weren't able to address, is the affordable housing piece of that. We've also had a request to have Rebuilding Together Rogue Valley, which helps with very specific adaptations for homes to help people stay in their homes, like ramps and grab bars. Corey had let me know that where she used to live, Habitat for Humanity used to do other kinds of home repairs. And I haven't heard that locally, but I now have them on my list to try to learn more. And maybe that's another possibility. The other item that occurred to me, and we get one, pretty much one every 18 months we can do of these, is I don't think we've ever had a presentation on the various utility discounts and help that are available for people. You know, as we were thinking today about what are the most fundamental needs of food and housing, heat and cooling, well, now cooling, now that we're having these extreme weather events, is another important topic. So those are four different ones that have been floating. I was originally thinking to have Linda Reed come, but normally I would get with Michael, or Mike, I'm sorry, Mike, when you write Michael on your screen there, Mike, it throws me off. Normally I get with Mike, and as the chair, he kind of helps prioritize what order we should bring some in. So it's up to you if you want to weigh in, or you want to just turn it over to Mike and have him schedule that.
Go for it.
Yeah, I think those are four great suggestions. I think a lot of it probably depends on who's available.
Yeah.
I will say that I'm sure we can have a more robust discussion on livable Ashland and a presentation in the same meeting. I'm sure.
I think so.
If we just shuffle the agenda to highlight livable Ashland and a presentation.
Oh, I'll have to check it out.
I think we can usually do that. We can have a presentation and one of our internal discussion items. And I'm sorry, Sandy, was there another topic I missed that I didn't, I got lost in my notes here?
I didn't have another topic.
Oh, okay.
Or Jen.
We'll go ahead and get together and we'll find out.
I think he was good. I mean,
and look, we're probably in somebody else's meeting. anything else from any ASAC members? Okay, then you'll leave it up to Eileen, Natalie, and I to come up with the agenda for the next meeting. And our next meeting will be November 8th, 2021 at 3:30. Mike, when you get your cancellation message for 3:00, just ignore it, and we'll be good to go at 3:30 in a couple months. So thanks for everyone for your time today, and look forward to seeing you in a couple months.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.